we have this amazing instrument inside our skulls called our brains, which have been designed by millions of years of evolution to allow us contact to these other realms, because contact with those other realms is vital for our survival, vital for our understanding of ourselves, vital for our health. We have the ability to contact it. It's just in modern society we've shut that ability down, and we fear it, and we despise it, and we even demonize and criminalize it. Whereas in tribal and hunter-gatherer societies, that ability to shift one's consciousness into contact with other dimensions is highly prized, and is the ability of shamans throughout the world. So I think we're dealing with an incredibly complicated problem here. It's no wonder that science has found it hard to come to grip with the supernatural and with the UFO phenomenon, because there is so little that is measurable and observable in the direct materialist terms that mainstream science is used to. But when we come down to the level of consciousness and realize that, that the brain, the traditional model is that these things called visions or hallucinations are actually made up in the brain. They're just sort of cooked up in the brain. They're generated by the brain. But we don't think that, for example, when we stand and look at a beautiful sunset or meet a fellow human being who is very striking to us in one way or another. We don't think that that experience is being generated by our brains. We naturally think that there is an outside reference point, whether it's the sunset or the beautiful person, which is giving us that experience. And the evidence I present is that the same is absolutely true of those experiences that we call visions and hallucinations, that there is indeed an outside reference point, but it is not of this world and thus cannot be measured with this world technology. We need to use the technology of consciousness that shamans have mastered in order to negotiate and deal with these other realms. In other words, we need to change our state of consciousness. We need to retune the receiver wavelength of the brain.
Why does DNA figure so prominently in your book, Supernatural?
Well, this again is an area of inquiry that I did not expect that I was going to get into when I began research on this subject. But I was presented with a mystery, which is all around the world. Going back, the earliest surviving evidence we have for this dates back 35,000 years to a little cave called Fumani Cave in Italy, in northern Italy near Verona. And in that cave is encountered the first ever cave painting to have survived, the oldest cave painting that we so far know about. And what it shows is a supernatural being. It shows a creature that does not exist in this daily life. It shows a creature with horns and hooves, a part animal, part human combination. And that combination is exactly how many modern UFO abductees report that so-called aliens first appear to them. So we are dealing with a phenomenon that has been with us for tens of thousands of years. And exactly at the moment that our ancestors started painting these images of recognizable supernatural beings, that's exactly the moment that the whole suite of modern human behavior was switched on at once. Suddenly, overnight, we became very cunning hunters. We started to anticipate where the great herds of game would be. We started to track and plan their movements in ways that we'd never done before. We invented increasingly cunning and complicated tools. Our social organization stepped up. We began to weave textiles and fabrics. It literally was, as I said earlier, as though a light was switched on in the human brain all over the world. And exactly the moment it happens, we find the first ever recorded, documented evidence of our contact with supernatural beings. And I believe that the key, and there's a huge amount of academic evidence for this, which I report in Supernatural. This is the first time in my career as a researcher that I actually find myself agreeing with the mainstream academics, because the prevailing theory in anthropology now of the study of cave and rock art around the world is that indeed it was done by artists who had experienced altered states of consciousness, by shamans who perhaps had stumbled across plants which they initially thought were food items, perhaps psilocybin mushrooms, and they consumed them as food items, and then they found that that this opened a door in their consciousness, and they found themselves in contact with other beings and other worlds, and they documented those contacts on the cave walls. And exactly at the moment they did it, that's the moment that we became fully human. So this is a crucial moment in human history, and it wasn't just a moment. It has continued without cease down the ages, this transit to and fro with other dimensions, this transdimensional contact with beings who sometimes hurt us, but very often in a strange way seem to love us and to care about us and to want to bring out the best in us. And never before has such contact been so badly needed as it is today.
Has this been an evolution for you, Graham? Because I don't think you've always felt these views.
No, it has. It has been an evolution, and a crucial part of the evolution, first of all, has been a dispassionate study of the evidence, the evidence for what is involved with the supernatural, and secondly, the personal experiences that I have had. I traveled to the Amazon to work with traditional shamans there, drinking the powerful plant brew that they use in order to reach the other world. And that brew is called ayahuasca. It means the vine of souls. And in fact, it's made up of two different plants. One of them is a vine, one of these creepers that hangs down from the tall trees
right.
in the Amazon. And the other are the leaves of a bush. And the bush is known as chacruna in the Amazon. Its scientific name is Cicotria viridis. And this bush, its leaves, contain an extremely powerful hallucinogen, which is illegal in the West, although it is in fact produced naturally in minute quantities in our own brains, in the pineal glands of our own brains. And this substance is called DMT, dimethyltryptamine. Now, the interesting thing is that DMT cannot be absorbed orally, and yet in the Amazon they drink it in a tea and it has these extraordinary effects. And the reason is because the other ingredient of the brew, the ayahuasca vine, contains a chemical that turns off the enzyme in our stomachs that normally destroys DMT on contact. It's an extraordinary achievement of science in the Amazon, if you like, that they discovered that these two plants had these properties only when mixed together. It can't simply be a matter of trial and error. And when you ask the shamans about it, they say the spirits of the plants told us what to do. They always tell us what to do. And the spirit of ayahuasca is frequently seen. I myself have seen her in this form, and so have many other sane and rational, grounded people from all around the world who have drunk ayahuasca. The spirit of ayahuasca very often appears in the form of an enormous serpent, or sometimes a seething mass of serpents. And she has lessons for us. Drinking ayahuasca has been described as joining a school. Professor Benny Shannon of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, who is the leading academic expert on ayahuasca, describes it on that way, that it was like entering a school that had a program of teaching for him. And that's exactly the way the shamans in the Amazon describe it, and that's exactly the way that I experienced it too.